they went into a low orbit. There lay the silver-white beauty of Alisomenius Sinica beneath them. Zaphod stayed in bed with one head stuck under a pillow and the other doing crosswords till late into the night. Trillia nodded patiently again, counted to a sufficiently high number, and told herself that the important thing now was just to get Zaphod talking. She prepared, by dint of deactivating all the robot kitchen synthematics, the most fabulously delicious meal she could contrive. Delicately oiled meats, scented fruits, fragrant cheeses, fine Aldebaran wines. She carried it through to him and asked if he felt like talking things through.
Zarkov, said Zaphod.
Trillian nodded patiently to herself, counted to an even higher number, tossed the tray lightly aside, walked to the transport room and just teleported herself the hell out of his life. She didn't even program any coordinates. She hadn't the faintest idea where she was going, she just went. A random row of dots flowing through the universe. Anything, she said to herself as she left, is better than this.
Good job too,
muttered Zaphod to himself, turned over and failed to go to sleep. The next day he restlessly paced the empty corridors of the ship, pretending not to look for her, though he knew she wasn't there. He ignored the computer's querulous demands to know just what the hell was going on around here by fitting a small electronic gag across a pair of its terminals. After a while, he began to turn down the lights. There was nothing to see. Nothing was about to happen. Lying in bed one night, and night was now virtually continuous on the ship, he decided to pull himself together, to get things into some kind of perspective. He sat up sharply and started to pull clothes on. He decided that there must be someone in the universe feeling more wretched, miserable, and forsaken than himself, and he determined to set to and find him. Halfway to the bridge, it occurred to him that it might be Marvin, and he returned to bed. It was a few hours later than this, as he stomped disconsolately about the darkened corridors, swearing at cheerful doors, that he heard the whop said, and it made him very nervous. He leant tensely against the corridor wall, and frowned like a man trying to unbend a corkscrew by telekinesis. He laid his fingertips against the wall and felt an unusual vibration. And now he could quite clearly hear slight noises and could hear where they were coming from. They were coming from the bridge. Moving his hand along the wall, he came across something he was glad to find. He moved on a little further, quietly.
Computer, he hissed.
Said the computer terminal nearest him, equally quietly.
Is there someone on this ship?
Said the computer.
Well, who is it?
Said the computer.
What?
Zaphod buried one of his faces in two of his hands.
Oh, Zarquan, he muttered to himself.
Then he stared up the corridor towards the entrance to the bridge in the dim distance, from which more and purposeful noises were coming, and in which the gagged terminals were situated.
Computer!
He hissed again.
When I ungag you, remind me to punch myself in the mouth. Either one.
Now just tell me this. One for yes, two for no. Is it dangerous? It is? You didn't just go twice. He inched his way up the corridor as if he would rather be yarding his way down it, which was true. He was within 2 yards of the door to the bridge when he suddenly realised to his horror that it was going to be nice to him, and he stopped dead. He hadn't been able to turn off the door's courtesy voice circuits. This doorway to the bridge was concealed from view within it because of the excitingly chunky way in which the bridge had been designed to curve round, and he had been hoping to enter unobserved. He leant despondently back against the wall again and said some words which his other head was quite shocked to hear. He peered at the dim pink outline of the door and discovered that in the darkness of the corridor he could just about make out the sensor field, which extended out into the corridor and told the door when there was someone there for whom it must open and to whom it must make a cheery and pleasant remark. He pressed himself hard back against the wall and edged himself towards the door, flattening his chest as much as he possibly could to avoid brushing against the very, very dim perimeter of the field. He held his breath and congratulated himself on having lain in bed sulking for the last few days, rather than trying to work out his feelings on chest expanders in the ship's gym. He then realised he was going to have to speak at this point. He took a series of very shallow breaths and then said as quickly and as quietly as he could,
"Dor, if you can hear me, say so very, very quietly."
Very, very quietly, the door murmured,
"I can hear you."
"Good. Now, in a moment, I'm going to ask you to open. When you open, I do not want you to say that you enjoyed it, okay?"
"Okay."
"And I don't want you to say to me that I have made a simple door very happy, or that it is your pleasure to open for me and your satisfaction to close again with the knowledge of a job well done, okay?"
"Okay."
"And I do not want you to ask me to have a nice day. You understand?"
"I understand."
"Okay," said Zaphod, tensing himself. "Open now."
The door slid open quietly. Zaphod slipped quietly through. The door closed quietly behind him.
"Is that the way you like it, Mr. Beeblebrox?"
said the door out loud.
"I want you to imagine," said Zaphod to the group of white robots who swung round to stare at him at that point, "that I have an extremely powerful Kilozap blaster pistol in my hand."